The name of the book is called Howard Cosell, The Man, Myth, and the Transformation of American Sports. And the author of this fine book is Mark Hrabowski, and he has joined us on Sports Byline. Mark, I alluded before the break to another event. That was in 1970, and that, of course, was when ABC launched Monday Night Football. At what state in his career was Howard Cosell that it was a natural for him to be a part of that three-man broadcasting crew, which in and if you look at sports across the board, you know, Monday Night Football was just really something that took off. What was it that got him involved with that?
Well, he had to be. There was no other choice because Rune Arledge, the president of ABC, without whom there never would have been Cosell, basically. He never would have reached those heights. Arledge had determined early on, about 10 years before, that Cosell was perfect for what he wanted to do with the network, which was to put a distinct voice, face, and a guy who was opinionated, but his opinions came from fact, not just from emotion. He wanted that to be the face of ABC Sports. And by 1970, it was, because Cosell had done not only the work with Ali, reporting on the Ali situation, but also at the 68 Mexico City Olympics, when he landed the interview with Tommy Smith after the Smith-Carlos Black Power salute on the victory stand in Mexico City. It was Cosell who did that, who landed that interview. So he had already proved his bona fides as a reporter and a journalist and as a sportscaster by then. So it was absolutely, even though Arledge didn't offer him the job right away, I think he may have been looking for a reason not to give Cosell a job, because it was a big deal to give Cosell a job. He had never done that kind of sportscasting before, contemporaneous, you know, game coverage. And he was a non-jock. He had never done much football, so I think Arledge was a little bit skittish about doing it, because a lot of people at ABC still were not Cosell fans. But it was basically a given that Cosell would be part of that, because he wanted to attract non-football fans. He wanted to attract women, and to do that, you couldn't just have a couple of jocks the way it was on Sunday afternoon. You had to make that show an entertainment vehicle. You had to make that a cultural vehicle. It had to be an event every Monday night. And that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And I think Rune Arledge, with that philosophy of not making it just a presentation of a game, but making it a presentation of an entertainment event, is one of the things that made it as big as it was. And when Monday Night Football came to town, it was like the circus had come to town in a three-act event. I remember talking to a number of my friends that were associated with the broadcast, and they said, you know, there were limos, there were, you know, big press events and everything else. He took to that. I mean, that was Howard Cosell.
Yeah, there would be like Chamber of Commerce luncheons, you know. I mean, there would be, you know, the government would shut down and they'd have a lunch with Cosell, Gifford, and Meredith. People don't realize now what an event that was. That revolutionized all of sports entertainment. This was the biggest thing on television for a sports fan. There was no ESPN then. There weren't constant replays of the Sunday games. The only way you could basically see it, the highlights were at halftime on Monday Night Football, and even that caused a controversy, because people from you know, in cities with teams that weren't being shown would write angry letters saying, "You're biased against my team." That's how crazy it got on Monday Night Football. And we all know about the signs in the stands, you know, the vicious signs about Cosell. We know about the FBI agents having to guard him. We know about the death threats and the bomb plots and all that. That's how crazy it was, Monday Night Football. People don't realize just what the center of the sports universe it was then.
Did it almost blow up on him when he made the comment during a Monday Night Football game? It was Washington involved, and it was I don't know whether it was a highlight or whether it was the game itself, I believe, in which he referred to the player that returned the punt or the kick as, "Look at that little monkey run."
Yeah, it was Alvin Garrett, a wide receiver of the Redskins at the time. It was 1983, and it did get him into a lot of trouble, although undeserved. I mean, there were a lot of things you could criticize about Cosell, but the suggestion that he was anti-black, that he was racist, was just ridiculous. He had used that expression, "little monkey," referring to his grandchildren. He had actually used it on a previous Monday Night Football game, referring to a white player, Mike Adamley. And he, you know, it perhaps not the wisest choice of words to use to refer to a black man, but certainly the brouhaha that developed afterward was absolutely unjustified. But at the time, 1983, he was sort of nearing the end of the line anyway, because he was just so unhappy and so angered about everything that his tenure was just about to expire anyway. That only hastened it and made him even more contemptuous of the whole professional sports structure. And he was able to vent about that in the book that he wrote, I Never Played the Game, which managed to offend just about everyone who knew him. At that time, he was about ready to blow his top and just tar everybody with the same brush.
And he was involved with almost every sporting event that ABC had. And I will share with you one of my favorite stories that Al Michaels shared with me. They were doing a playoff game in baseball. As I said, he did everything. Boxing, he did football, he did baseball. And it was after a Kansas City Royals playoff game, and they were going back in the limo to the hotel. And Al tells me they're driving down the road, and as they go by this one corner, there are some kids there fighting. Mm-hmm. Some African-American kids that are fighting there, and they go by it, and Howard says to the driver, stop this car and go back. And Al looks at Howard and said, Howard, what are you doing? And the driver backs up the car. Howard opens the door, gets out, and Al is saying, now, Howard, don't do this. You know, this is dangerous. And Howard gets out, goes up to the two kids, and he says to one of them, you are the diminutive one. You have no punch. You cannot take a punch. And he turns to the other one, and for you, you're going to lose this fight. Now stop this. And the two kids obviously knew who he was. They stopped it. And he gets back into the limo with Al Michaels. And Al is like almost cowering down on the bottom of the back seat. And he gets up and he says, Howard, we could have gotten hurt seriously. And Howard turns to Al and says, young man, I know who I am.
Yeah, it's a famous story. And the funny thing is, Al Michaels is like a lot of people in sports. He loves Howard, but he had one of the ugliest confrontations with Howard also in the booth during a baseball game in 1985, because Howard had showed up drunk and Al he started picking fights on the air with whatever Al Michaels said, and they had a really big blowout where Michaels threatened to quit if Cosell even showed up the next week. Yet he's able to tell that story that you just told, because people like Al Michaels, you know, broadcasters, might have had their run-ins with Howard, but they realized the giant that he was.
What about his relationship with Don Meredith and Frank Gifford as well as part of the three-man Monday night crew?
Yeah, it was very tempestuous. They enjoyed it at the start because they were doing something that had never been done before, and they were getting all kinds of publicity and money for it. But the egos that started clashing because of the event that Monday Night Football became ruined any relationship they may have had. They were at one point, all three of them had threatened to quit at one time or another because of what they imagined were slights coming from the other two directed at them. And it just became an untenable situation. You had to calm down Cosell and Meredith all the time because they were threatening not to even talk to each other during broadcast. Then you had the added issue of alcohol and maybe Meredith doing cocaine and all kinds of things like that. And so by the mid-70s, it was a mess. It was a good thing that Meredith actually left for a few years, but when he came back, it was the same thing. Could not get along with Cosell at all. And it's a shame because they were two brilliant, brilliant entertainers, but they just could not live with each other.
You mentioned about the alcoholism, and you would think that somebody who had accomplished as much as he had, who was making as much money as he was making, what was the connection? What was it that drove him to alcoholism?
Well, you know, you have to also, again, you have to consider the times. You know, I made the connection with the Mad Men TV show. This is how men, which was about advertising guys in the 60s, which was similar to broadcasting men in the 60s. Those guys drank their lunches. You know, they smoked heavily. That's the lifestyle they lived. So you have to understand, he wasn't really doing anything out of the ordinary. It's just that Cosell had a way of escalating his behavior like that. And so in the 80s, it started to become a real problem. And we all know about 1970 in Philadelphia, as I call it, when Cosell went on the air in Philadelphia Monday Night Football and apparently was drunk and threw up all over Don Meredith's cowboy boots. Cosell, of course, claimed he wasn't drunk, but he apparently was. So drinking had always been a constant in his life, as it was that night in Munich in 1972. So it became a problem later on, and it was one that ABC had hoped they could avoid, but it came back to bite them because he just could not control his alcohol or his temper in his later years.
Yeah, I was reading a story, and it said his exit from the stage is a kind of Shakespearean tragedy. And when I read that line, I thought to myself, having worked for him at one time, you know, it actually was. Those last 10 years or so were very, very difficult for him, were they not?
Oh, yeah, they were very tragic, especially, his health started going bad. And then the one and only ballast in his life, the only person he could ever turn to, the only person who could ever control him and keep him from making a fool of himself in public, his wife, Emmy, she got very sick. And then when she died in 1991, his life basically ended at that point. He lived for four more years, but he was really living death at that time. And those who saw him could barely watch, could barely look at the man that he had become, because he shriveled up into basically a shell of himself. And it was very sad to watch.
The part of the title of your book is The Transformation of American Sports. How did he transform it?
Completely. I mean, he took a medium that basically was the province of sports owners who had hired announcers only because sponsors liked them. They were totally uncontroversial. They were anodyne. They never said anything that would anger a sponsor or a team. He took that whole structure and he turned it completely upside down. He became the guy who proverbially bit the hand that fed him, because he at ABC he would criticize the NCAA, for example, which he considered to be a sewer of corruption. And he took that stand, even though ABC was the NCAA's network. It didn't matter. If he felt he had something to say, he would say it. He was the only guy who did then. He's still the only guy who ever has done that. And it's a shame that the business that he merged into entertainment, sports and entertainment, has become so much entertainment now that the journalistic aspect of it has been completely lost, which is why we'll never see the likes of Howard Cosell again. He would have been the first to tell you.
We've got about a minute left, but what do you think his legacy is, both as somebody involved with sports broadcasting and just on the scene?
Well, I think his legacy is that he changed the industry completely, but he only changed it for himself. He was a one in a million personality, a once in a generation figure, and we could learn a lot from him if we study him, because what we see now on TV is basically the same thing that Cosell saw when he broke in, which was just nothing really that elevated it to art at all. And he elevated it, and we should be thankful for him for that.
Are you happy with the way this book came out, Mark?
I think we did a good job. I had good editors. You know, they allowed me to do a long book, which is unusual in the industry now, because, economic times, you want to go with shorter books so you don't have to pay as much to bind them, But they let me say what I wanted to say, and it was fun because it had not been done before, which was the most shocking thing to me, that a man who dominated pop culture the way Cosell did in the 70s had never had a biography done about him. So I was proud to be the first, and well, I think we did a pretty good job with it.
Mark, I think so as well. Thank you very much for spending some time with us. Take care and come back anytime here on Sports Byline.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I hope people will read this book, because it's about an interesting man during an interesting time in sports. Howard Cosell, The Man, Myth, and the Transformation of American Sports. The author, Mark Roboski, with us. We'll take a break as we continue with more of you and America's sports talk show.